Svitolina. Quevedo goes down the backhand wing. Svitolina cross court. Backhand from Quevedo. Backhand Svitolina into the net, and we're at deuce.
And perhaps the irritation or the frustration is more that having had an opportunity at the 40 love point where she really did unleash in a forehand and blasted it wide. A couple of errors and now potentially in a little tricky position. Deuce trailing 2-3, having had three game points at 40 love.
Svitolina's missed her first serve. Second serve at deuce. Forehand return to the forehand of the backhand of Svitolina. Forehand from Kvedova.
Kvedo. Svitolina.
It drifts long. That really was an unforced error because she had Svitolina on the run.
Yeah, and to be fair, she didn't look like she had a lot on that. But I don't think it's, as I said, it's stifling. There doesn't appear to be any wind. We know that soon to come into, we've just had our colleagues.
Simon Campbell and Eleanor Preston. Champing at the bit.
Champing at the bit, ready to come. But I think they'll report that it's perhaps still very still outside, so no reason that ball floated long.
Advantage Svitolina. She hits a backhand up the line. Forehand from Quevedo. Forehand Svitolina. Backhand Quevedo. Making Svitolina moved. That's good depth from Svitolina. Off the top of the net from Quevedo. And Svitolina nets. Little bit of luck for the Spaniard. Karin Khachanov, the 13th seed, has now won. Made a bit of a meal of that fourth set. He was 5-3 up, had a match point of 5-4, but he eventually won it on a 7-4 tiebreak. So Khachanov through against the Argentinian. Forehand from Svitolina, cross court. Forehand from Quevedo is long. What are you chuckling at?
And a note from Red Sox Devil. Wait until you see what Khachanov did on match point. Framed a smash into the stands and almost everyone ended up laughing, including Trungoletti. It was Frank Spencer-style stuff. Not laughing anymore, but thankfully Karen finally got the win or he'd have ended up at the funny farm.
Good serve from Svitolina. Now goes cross court, but overdoes it. Just a slightly weird stage of this match.
Oh, no doubt. And Quevedo doing well to keep herself in this match in the infancy of the second set after the first one well and truly get away from her.
Deuce on the Svitolina serve. She's a setup, but 2-3 down in the second. She serves out wide. Forehand return. Forehand Svitolina down the line. Backhand Quevedo. Backhand Svitolina. Quevedo with a backhand cross court. Svitolina goes up the line. Quevedo is there with a lofted forehand, but that's going to land. Oh, it's on the sideline. Svitolina with a high ball, which goes long. She thought that was going out. And then when she came to hit the forehand, she just tried to play it nice and high percentage and hit it long.
And express some frustration. And now, all of a sudden...
It's a break point for 14.
In some pressure, we know she was really stretched in the first round. She went all the way to a third set super tiebreaker. So, you know, she would love to be able to rattle through this.
Return to serve, push deep from Quevedo. A lofted ball from Svitolina. I'm just wondering whether Svitolina's feeling the heat now. Backhand from Svitolina up the middle of the court. Forehand from Quevedo. Backhand Svitolina goes back to the backhand of Quevedo. Backhand to backhand at the moment. Now Quevedo goes the forehand wing of Svitolina. Forehand from Quevedo. Svitolina gets a very good depth on that one, but so does Quevedo. Good angle from Svitolina. Chipped back by Quevedo. Backhand Svitolina. Quevedo will have to have another chip, and that doesn't get back.
Fabulous ball striking as we have Simon Cambers and Lady Eleanor not too far from coming on. Back to Deuce. Beautiful tennis, Chris.
Wonderful tennis.
Egalite.
I think we'll switch at the end of this game rather than the next change of ends because...
You're keen to get downstairs to and...
I was going to go watch a bit of Fran Jones and... I may not have much time, but...
Lady Eleanor, when she gets on air, can tell me, having implored me to bring the twisties across from Australia, I notice they sit there untouched. Week two specials.
We're waiting for them to be left out in the heat and then Antoine could eat them.
Forehand from Svitolina to the backhand of Quevedo. Now Quevedo goes back down the middle of the court. Forehand Svitolina nets.
And you can see the frustration growing.
Well, I feel it's tiredness. I feel there's a bit of lack of energy from Svitolina. And it's coinciding with a really good phase in this match for Quevedo, who's cut out the errors that she was making in the first set.
Just certainly it is a flat spot.
Second break point for Caitlin Quevedo. Svitolina serves. That's an ace.
Beautiful serve. 162 straight up the tee. Skidded off the line.
I'd be happy with 162.
Yes, I think I would as well.
These days.
Yes.
100 miles an hour.
I'd still like,
a second
think,
serve.
Like to think I'm getting a little more pop serve. On mine.
It's got to go in, though.
The Svitolina serving. Forehand return to the forehand of Svitolina. She thumps that one, and that's too good for Caitlin Quevedo.
Svitolina.
It's a really important game for both players here. Svitolina striving, working really hard here to work through a difficult period. Quevedo, wow, she could get a break. It could well and truly be game on in this second round match. Moments. Lady Eleanor,
game point.
Champion at the bit to get on. Simon Camber's looking really casual today. No collar for the shirt.
Right out of clothes.
Forehand return from Quevedo to the
Didn't
forehand
pack.
Of Svitolina. That's going to be too good. Svitolina holds. Yeah. That could be a very big game. Would you like to take over from now, Simon?
Yes, please.
Good. Thanks
there
very
we
much. Go. Pleasure. Courtney, pleasure was mine.
Absolute pleasure. All the best over the next couple of hours, you two, Lady Eleanor and Simon.
Couple of
Thank
hours.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you very much, Chris. Courtney. Good hold from Elena Svitolina. I mean, it is roasting hot. If the players are feeling it, that's not surprising. Because it feels to me a little bit even warmer today than it was the first few.
Well, I can tell you that the seat is quite warm, Courtney. It's not the air conditioning in this commentary box is not incredible.
There is some. Meanwhile, Chris has managed to turn off the computer. That's good.
Oh, Chris.
Did you never turn it on?
Oh, Chris.
First point of the seventh game goes to Svitolina as the forehand from Quevedo goes just wide. Huge game. Always used to say the seventh game was the key game. That's what our coach used to say.
Like the seventh wave.
What's that?
Well, they say that seventh wave is the biggest wave.
Do they?
Apparently so.
Oh, I'm too much of a wuss to even get in. That serve from Quevedo must have wiped the back edge of the line. Svitolina's wandering up to it slowly, just drags her foot across it. More than anything, just to waste a bit of time.
David in Michigan has come up with the answer of where did the phrase anyone for tennis come from? And it was originally the 1914 George Bernard Shaw play, Misalliance.
Really?
Also used in 19... Dave's gone to town here. Brace yourself. 1925, Humphrey Bogart in Hell's Bells. 1952, Singing in the Rain. 1972, Monty Python's Flying Circus. And 1997, Seinfeld.
And every newspaper, every year, every day at Wimbledon.
In about June. Yes.
2015,
very much so.
That's good. Good knowledge. Thank you for that.
We've got a very knowledgeable group of listeners.
Exactly. Quite right. Enjoying fascinating battle between Elena Svitolina and Caitlin Quevedo here. Quevedo serving at 30-15. 3-3.
Eric wants to know the name of the lovely bakery on Avenue Mozart. But they've gone. We'll follow up, Eric. We'll follow up with Chris and Courtney.
They are not short of lovely bakeries, let's face it.
There are one or two around, aren't there?
Yeah, I think you could just take your pick. It'll be all right. You're not going to go too far wrong. Got the schedule for tomorrow, by the way. We will go through that in a little while. It's 30-all. And the Quevedo serve misses the first serve down the tee. Crucial game. More so for her, you would think, than Svitolina, given the scoreline. Svitolina winning the first set, 6-love. Serve to Svitolina, who wallops a forehand return just wide.
Well,
opportunity missed.
As Chris and Courtney were saying, that Svitolina really... She struggled in her first round match. It was not an easy match whatsoever, and she was very close to going out of the tournament and struggled with the conditions and struggled with just, I think, finding her game and knowing when to pull the trigger and be more attacking. She kind of almost went into, as we were saying, the first iteration of Svitolina, who was at times a little bit passive, nothing passive about that forehand.
Right.
the Ukrainian.
Perfectly timed by you.
I do my best, Simon, you know.
Exactly. No, it's true. I mean, I think she talked a bit about it after the match. It's more, for a lot of these players, it's the adjustment from the cool of the last few weeks to this. You know, she was in Rome where it was not warm for most of the time. The conditions were very different. Now the ball's flying, it's roasting hot. It just takes a little bit of time. And she also had to get herself settled after the high of winning in Rome. And, you know, maybe that was a good battle for her. We often talk about the need to, you know, to get a battle under your legs early on, just to get yourself battle hard and get yourself right into the tournament. And that's certainly what she got.
Yes, we were watching Novak Djokovic the other evening, and that was certainly a point well made about Djokovic. Yes, he went four sets, but actually at this stage, this is what Djokovic needs.
Stefan's going to fix Chris's technical inadequacies.
I mean, Stefan is head of IT.
He is IT.
Head of radio. Yes, that's true. Really, he's head of everything.
Another thumping return from Svitolina. Exactly the same as the point. Thank you very much, Stefan. 2 points ago. Gets it back to Juice.
If you're going to do an org chart, it would be the Empress, Stefan, as her enforcer.
Yes.
Facilitator.
Her enforcer.
A conciliary. Exactly. And then the rest of us are some way down. Yep. Probably on another page.
Misspelt. Not because she misspells anything, just because, you know, we're meaningless, aren't we?
Written in pencil, in case we do anything wrong.
Backhand down the middle of the court from Svitolina at Deuce, followed by a forehand cross court. It's pretty short. Kvedo can attack it. She goes up the line. Up goes the high lob on the backhand side from Svitolina. She'll get across to the pass, but she nets it. Had half a chance to slip it down the line, but missed. She does look tired, and I can't blame either of them for looking tired.
No, we've seen a lot of the my shoelaces, haven't we, during this tournament, where players just need a little bit of extra time to catch their breath and sort of will fiddle around with their shoes. It's a way of bending double without looking like you're bent double.
Serve down the tee from Gervais is good. Svitolina does a good job in getting it back deep on the forehand side, just bunted it back. Now she goes up the line again, trying to wrong foot Gervais, who gets the ball back into play on the angle. Svitolina pulls Gervais the backhand, just overcooked it, and it is a good hold of serve for Gervais. She moves ahead 4-3 in this second set. First set, Svitolina. Message from Matthew. So, Simon and Lady Elder, I'm visiting Paris for the first time later this summer as an 18th birthday present for my wonderful niece Tyra, who's almost 19 now, but it's taken a while to sort out. Where should we be visiting? What should we be doing? Thanks.
That's a great question, actually, Matthew. And happy birthday, Tyra.
Yeah.
Happy last birthday and upcoming birthday. I mean, I would say...
I'd say ask a Frenchman, but, you know...
Well, except that, I mean, I'm from London, and have been terrible for years at going to see anything in London because you become quite blasé about it. I was having this discussion with someone earlier, because in coming to Roland Garros every year, you get very lazy in only being in this suburb of Paris only going to That's things true. That are here and coming to the site and eating locally and actually there's so much of Paris, and during the Paris Olympics, I was lucky enough to be here for 3 weeks, I actually did a lot more getting out and about and doing things. I would say
you've got to see the classics.
You've got to go to see Notre Dame. It's beautiful.
Go to the Louvre.
The Louvre.
Go and stare at the Mona Lisa from miles away. It's the size of your hand.
Go to the Louvre before you leave the house, as a general rule.
Well, there are a couple in there, I think.
And I would say take a boat trip down the Seine, because actually I think cities are sometimes best seen from the river.
Yep. I mean, there are so many lovely parts of Paris.
Sacré-Cœur.
Exactly. Montmartre, all that area up in the north of the city. We're in the southwest of the city, and it's beautiful around here. But as Eleanor said, there are so many things to do. I mean, you know, you could say that you've got to go to the Trocadero and look down on the Eiffel Tower from there. You could go up the Eiffel Tower if you can. Depends how hot it is. It's roasting hot now, and it's been tough for people trying to sightsee over the last few days. I can tell you that from personal experience. But, enjoy it. And also, enjoy the food and the drink. Food and wine, you can't go wrong.
Go to a lovely patisserie and get yourself a pan au chocolat.
Or two. 100.
And then roll down the nearest street, find an ice-cold glass of rosé. Rosé de Provence, possibly, from the south of France.
Ooh, Svitolina catches the baseline with a forehand. Cavada wasn't sure, but she checks it out, and it is good.
Eat some cheese.
Yeah. The food and drink and lifestyle, I think, is amazing. They've got the life-work balance right. You know, I think those from Britain, America, often used to like to sort of sniff at the French for maybe, you know, taking too much enjoyment out of life, whereas they're working too hard over there. And, you know, there's a balance to be had. And I think they've got it just about right here. Forehand from Svitolina, miss hit, lands on the line. It's 30-15 up to the Ukrainian at 3-4 in the final set. Massive backhand straight down the middle of the court from Svitolina, then takes the pace off the next one, and that draws the error from Cavada. Just that change in speed and spin does the trick.
One of the wonderful things about this tournament is that it's a celebration of tennis, of course, but it's also, to a degree, a celebration of Paris and a celebration of Frenchness.
Yeah,
completely. I think, you know, you actually can get wonderful food here. They have, particularly this year, where they've upped the number of chefs they have, and they really want to showcase
top chefs,
the wonderful cuisine in Paris.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. It's an incredibly chic place to come. Everyone dresses really well. It is a lovely, lovely thing to visit, Roland-Garros and Paris in general. Yeah, and if you're here, Matthew, try and get a ticket for Roland-Garros.
Adamita says, all the talk about snacks and sweets and cheese is making me hungry, which is not good for one's waist. I now feel like having a pan au chocolat.
Me too.
Me Adamita. Three.
That would be lovely. If someone can go and get that for us, it would be lovely. We'll try to eat it without sounding like idiots on the radio. Svitolina comes forward to drive a volley into the open space. Cavada gets there, puts the lob up, but it's wide. And the familiar pose of Elena Svitolina, their left fist pumping into the air. Holder serve, 4-4, getting closer to the victory line here. Just let look at the court number 7. I've got my eye on that court as well, because Elena Ostapenko and Magda Linette are a set all now. Linette taking the first, 6-2. Ostapenko, number 29 seed, hitting back 6-2, and the importance of that match, not just a place in the third round, but the winner plays Iga Świątek. And of course, Iga Świątek has never beaten Elena Ostapenko.
0-6.
Yeah.
In that one.
It might even be, is it 0-6 or it might even be 7?
But Magda Linette is a sort of very seasoned campaigner.
Yeah.
On every service. Very good player, but also just someone who will always dig in. She's had a great career, and she's a fine competitor.
Got to the semis, the Australian once.
Yeah, Ostapenko can be a little bit up and down because she plays first strike tennis all the time, and she doesn't necessarily take much off. There's a high risk factor in her tennis. Well, Linette, I think, has just gone for a bathroom break, and Ostapenko is taking the time to just speak to her team, get a bit of insight. She's currently wearing one of these sort of sausage-shaped
ice towels
over her head, which rather sort of makes her look as though she's come from Tudor times. She's wearing a sort of fetching bonnet.
Yeah. Well, she's doing the right thing, trying to stay cool. Meanwhile, here on court, Philippe Chatrier, Svitolina and Cavada going at it, and Svitolina comes forward off a forehand pass from Cavada, goes long, and it's 15-30 on the Spaniard serve. 4-4, second set. First set to Svitolina, 6-6. Svitolina pushing for the break.
Rose wants to know if we think that Cavada is able to pull a Burrell and pull an upset in taking out a seed after losing the first set.
Well, I think it's going to be much harder because, you know, as good a player as Jess Pegula is, she doesn't really like playing on clay, whereas Svitolina loves it. So arguably, well, no argument about it, it's her best surface. And she's in red-hot form as well, so it's going to be tough for Cavada. But you never know. That's why they put up the net, as Jimmy Connors said. Put the forehand wide from Svitolina. Very wide. Wide of the tram lines, in fact. And it's 30-all.
And if you weren't with us last night, where were you? But you may have missed that Jessica Pegula, the fifth seed, was knocked out of the tournament by Australia's Kimberly Burrell. Really, really big win for the Australian. But as you say,
massive.
Not the American's best surface.
No, huge win for Burrell. Cavada serves to the forehand of Svitolina, who nets, really being aggressive on that forehand return. finds the top of the net. Yeah, I mean, what a win for Burrell. That's she's such a nice young woman, so good to talk to, a lot of fun, and been through a lot of injuries and stuff, and to come through with a win like that, it's great for her.
She had a good little run in Australia, didn't she?
Yeah.
And in the tournaments leading up and then the Australian Open. And as you say, she's a very genial, always smiling.
Volley from Svitolina just about holds onto the racket long enough get the ball to just drop over the net onto the sideline. Good hands from the Ukrainian in the end. She didn't look completely comfortable, but actually it was a better volley than it looked.
It was a better volley than she thought it was,
yeah.
Because she hit it and kind of danced on her toes as if to say, is it going to go over? Has it gone over? Yes, it has.
Deuce at 4-4. Veda just wipes a bit of sweat from her brow, gets ready to serve. Serve is long. Second serve. Crowd dead quiet. Second serve is hammered by Svitolina. Chvedo does a good job in coping with the pace and getting the ball back into play. She goes backhand down the line. Svitolina gets to it, pulls the forehand down the middle of the court. She's under pressure as Svitolina from the power of the ground strokes from Chvedo. So Svitolina hoists a little high backhand to give her time to get back in position. There goes some height from Chvedo. Svitolina steps into it with the backhand down the middle. Then inside out goes Svitolina. It's good. Here she comes. Ukrainian puts away a drive volley. That is a well-played point from Helena Svitolina.
I mean, actually a well-played point from both of them. Really big hitting from both women. Svitolina just spotted the opportunity. Came ghosting in behind a deep shot and was able to put away the drive volley. And there's an example of perhaps that is a rally that Svitolina might have played differently 5 or 6 or 7 years ago, when, as I said, she was a little bit more passive, a more naturally defensive-minded player.
It's break point to Helena Svitolina, the number 7 seed this year. The first serve goes missing. Second serve from Chvedo, with Svitolina standing inside the baseline to return. Attacks on the forehand, inside out. She hit that one really well for most of the match. Goes inside out again. In comes to the net. Drop volley from Svitolina is a beauty. And there's the break she wanted. It puts her 5-4 in front of this second set, and just a game away from a place in the third round.
Svitolina men, Sang-Jezaka.
That was nice hands again from Svitolina.
Really nice hands and really clear thinking in how she was playing that point. And you heard from the crowd, you know, she's popular everywhere she goes. I think people have really engaged with her story of being a mum, and also, obviously, she's spoken very eloquently about the plight of the people in Ukraine following the Russian invasion and all of those things. But also here, of course, she's married to a Frenchman, which doesn't half help you win some friends.
Yes, exactly.
Especially a Frenchman as popular as Gael Monfils.
Quite right. Yeah, she is very popular here, speaks nice French, as you said. And yeah, with Monfils in tow, they create a pretty good power couple in the tennis world. Gael, of course, bowing out from Roland Garros here with a 5-set defeat in the first round. But we'll play on for the rest of the year, which is good, and probably finish his career, all being well, in Paris again. The Masters, where I imagine he might get a wild card.
It's possible, isn't it?
Imagine if he didn't.
They might have to have a think about
imagine
it.
Imagine if he didn't. It'd be a riot. You think there are riots after PSG win the Champions League? There'd be an absolute riot if that didn't happen.
So, I always wanted to call that tournament Bercy, but of course it's now moved to La Défense.
In a better arena, I have to say. Well, actually, Bercy was good. The main court was good, wasn't it? The main show court. It was huge.
It was incredible, but it was very deep.
Yeah.
So very, very steep-sided
stands.
An incredible atmosphere. It was my venue for the Olympic Games, so I spent a lot of time there.
But the other two courts are not so good there. So the
One of them was in what's normally used as a nightclub.
Yeah, exactly. It was like low-level lighting, which is not very good for tennis. Better for nightclubs.
And velvet walls.
Mm, yeah, exactly.
it had a lot of character as a venue.
Moving on. 15 love. Svitolina serving for the match. And caught Philippe Chatrier. Misses the first serve off the top of the net. Second serve to come. Hovedo waiting just behind the baseline. Then by the time she hits the return, well, she doesn't hit the return because it's a slider of an ace on the second serve. I love serves like that. It was really short in the box. And the reason it was an ace is because it almost bounced twice before it got to her. She couldn't cut off the angle.
So clever.
Yeah, it really was clever. 2 points away now, 30 love. Svitolina goes out wide on the to the forehand of Hovedo. Then the Spaniard gets to the backhand on the two-hander. Hits a good one. Oh, a whopping forehand inside out from Svitolina, and it's 3 match points. There are nerves sometimes when you're serving out for matches, but this is how you want to do it if you're Elena Svitolina.
Well, it's almost as if that tussle in the first round has done her a lot of good, because she's looking super composed, very confident. She's looking like a player that's won the number of matches that she's won.
Yeah, came through a tough stage in this match. Now stands at 3 match points, just misses the serve out wide. Has to wait a little while as the ball girl gathers the ball and gets back to her mark behind Hovedo, and there's a double fault from Svitolina. And I'll take it back about no nerves.
Commentator's eye, exactly. Isn't it?
Exactly. There are always some, doesn't matter how good you are. It's that last point you have to win. It's the beauty of the tennis scoring system. Hovedo's still in it, but it's 2 match points still to Svitolina. She bounces the ball a couple of times, gets into her service motion. Goes to the backhand of Hovedo on the return. Good backhand from Svitolina. Backhand angle from Hovedo is well wide. And the match is Elena Svitolina's. She bangs a ball up into the crowd in celebration. Nicely caught by a gentleman in a cap. It has a nice handshake with Hovedo at the net. And she takes the applause after a solid 6-love, 6-4 win. And sends her into the third round.
Well, waving to all four corners of the court, touching her heart as well. She's feeling very, very at home here, and she seems to be at home with the fact that she's a contender for this title.
Yeah, absolutely. She'll be pleased with that. Gets her through to the third round again.
We're playing AC/DC now.
We are, yeah.
It's quite an eclectic music list here.
Sort of thing that you normally play at the night session. It's obviously getting into it early. Nice round of applause for Caitlin Hovedo in her Grand Slam debut. Acquitted herself very well. And hopefully we'll build from here. Svitolina, meanwhile, marches on. Many people's pick this year, perhaps, for a big run towards the title. She'll play Wang Zhenyu or Tamara Korpach. I'm not sure if that one's been played already.
I think they played earlier.
Might have been.
Let me double check on that result.
Yeah, I think it was one, but we'll find out. The number 32 seed. That will be the third round battle. Svitolina is just getting her stuff together. And now she's going to talk to Caroline Garcia, the former world number 4.
Elena, congratulations. That was a very solid win today. How happy are you with your performance?
Yeah, it was a great match. I think, in the first set, I was playing really well. And of course, you expect your opponent to step up the game. And I was very happy the way I could stay strong and, break on fall was a really tough game and then serve it out nicely.
Yeah, great job. In the first round, you had a very tough battle, winning 7-6 in the third. After such a match, such a battle, being so close from defeat, do you get extra confident? Do you feel more relaxed to be maybe you were almost out of the tournament maybe? How do you feel?
It gave me definitely the confidence of a big battle, and I played actually 4 matches in a row coming from Rome, 3 setters, and it's nice to get 2 set win today actually. But to be fair, in the first round when you get such a battle, it puts you directly into like fighting mode and tournament mindset, so it's probably nice for me to actually get that through and be in the third round now.
And so you won Roland Garros Junior in 2010. 16 years ago, you're still here on this court competing at one of your best level of your career. How does it feel? How special is it?
Yeah, it's crazy to think that it was that long ago. And, you know, I was here, I was just 15 years old at the time and was very little and dreaming, you know, to play here one day. And, yeah, it's crazy to think that I went past so much already, have a little daughter, Sky, back at home, married to the French guy. So, yeah, it's crazy to think that.
So, like you said, you're married to a French guy. Do you want to say a few words in French?
Je parle pas très bien français, mais je me marie à Gaël. Donc, l'ambiance et votre soutien, c'est ouf.
Mesdames et messieurs, Elina Svitolina.
Elina Svitolina gets off the court before she has to do any more French speaking.
I like that.
Oof. It's a good one, isn't it?
She summed things up, didn't she?
She did, yeah, quite
good,
right.
Good win for Svitolina.
Yeah, looked pretty happy about things. Looks pretty happy in general. Sounds happy, content. And often when you're like that, your best tennis comes.
Yeah, like I said, I think she's comfortable with where she's at in her career. She's comfortable with the expectation on her. She's feeling confident, and why not? She's in fine form and was in pretty good form today.
She certainly was. She's through to the third round, where she will play Elena, as you were telling me earlier, Tamara Korpach.
Tamara Korpach.
Who came through against the number 32 seed, Jinyu Wang. So, very good effort from her, and that'll be on Friday.
That was three sets, that match.
Okay. The next match on Court Philippe Chatrier is going to be Novak Djokovic in the heat of the day, which promises to be interesting. It's one of the things one of the few things he doesn't like doing, playing in the absolute heat. Said it many times. I don't think anyone really relishes it, but it's certainly, if not kryptonite, certainly something that can be difficult for him. So that's coming up against Valentin Royer of France in probably 10 minutes or so. I'll read out the order of play for tomorrow before we switch courts. Should we get in touch with Lynette and Ostapenko?
Yes, I think so.
Because that does have a lot of relevance as to what's coming up.
It does. If you're just joining us, winner of Ostapenko against Lynette will play Iga Swiatek, the four-time champion here, and Ostapenko in particular has a very, very good record against Swiatek.
You're absolutely right. 6-0, as you were saying earlier. And it's 1-1 in the third set. Lynette 40-15 on her own serve. Somehow managed to mislay tomorrow's order play, so I'll have to read it off the screen instead.
If only there was some digital device that you could look at it on.
Someone needs to invent something.
A really, really good website with loads of news and features and live scores and draws. Amazing!
Well, tomorrow's order of play, Thursday at Roland Garros, on court Philippe Chatrier, starting as usual at midday local time, Yannick Sinner. I imagine that the top names are being told that they have to alternate a little bit to be fair to everybody, playing in the day and the night. So you've got Novak in the afternoon today, played in the night, the first match. Sinner played his first match at night. Now he's going to play first match, and I imagine he requested first match because it's not quite as hot as later in the day. Takes on the Argentinian, one of the two brothers. He takes on Juan Manuel Cerúndolo in the first match. That'll be followed by Deanne Parry, who we watched have a good win yesterday. Plays Anne Lee of the United States. Then it's the number one seed, Arina Sabalenka, against Elise Jacquemot of France. And another Frenchman gets the night match, Arthur Rinderknecht, against Matteo Berrettini of Italy. Interesting, there's always a lot of decisions made by the schedulers as to who plays when, but that's the night match tomorrow.
Well, we had a few questions about this from our listeners earlier about how the scheduling works, and one of the questions was, how come Yannick Sinner got to play at night and he's only going to play at night? Well, proof in that order of play that does not happen. And as I said, and I'm sure you'd concur, that the driving force of all the different factors they have to take into account, the driving force is actually about fairness. Fairness to both players.
Should be, yeah. Sometimes we've seen it in some slams before where, you know, maybe some players have got a bit of favouritism and have played at night all the way through, or, you know, in better conditions. But, yeah, the fairness should be the key. There are as you said, there are a lot of different competing entities who want their say, including television.
Well, but yeah, because and you've got to think about television in different time zones. When you have a player from one time zone and one in a radically different player, radically different time zone, then, you know, both of those will want the match to be on at a time when most people can watch. So there's lots of things to balance out.
Do you know how many... Because I'm thinking about writing something about this, the scheduling, but more importantly, players requesting matches. You know, somebody asked Cam Norrie whether he'd requested to go on whatever course it was the other day, and he's like, well, I don't think they'd listen to me. So what percentage of players actually put in a request through their agent, do you think?
I'm not sure that players would request a particular court, but I think they would request a particular day.
And,
I think
and early or late, because, you know, Iga's played the first two matches first on. I think she's probably requesting that. They'll be, yeah, I'll play a day, but put me first, please.
Yeah, I mean, as always, the requests are requests. They're just that. It's not a guarantee of anything because there are so many other factors to take into account. But it's also when you, the time of day that you played your last match. Not so much at Grand Slams where players have a day off, but certainly at WTA and ATP events, you've got to think, if you were last match on, they're not going to put you first on the next day.
There are other rules, like you can't play, certainly on the tour, and I think it's the same in the Slams, you can't play, if you're playing singles and doubles, on the same day, you have to play your singles first.
Always, yeah.
You can't play doubles first. So that's a factor that kicks in. I know, for example, Petra Kvitova used to love playing first in the second half of her career, especially also once she's had a child. And a lot of the mothers who are playing, they like that, you know, the fact that they know what time they're going to start for sure. And then they can be away for the rest of the day and gone.
Yeah. Well, I think lots of players like to be first on because also it's the only slot where you know when you're going to start generally, and it means it makes it much easier to plan when you eat and when you warm up and all of those other factors. Whereas, you know, if you're after a best of five men's match, it could be an hour and a half, it could be 3 hours, and that's one of the sorts of peculiarities of tennis, actually, in comparison to other sports, is you really have to think about that.
Yeah,
and manage. You players get very good at managing. They're very good nappers, for example. Fantastic nappers. When you go kind of backstage and into, if you like, and into locker rooms and player lounges, and a lot of tournaments now have quiet rooms for exactly that purpose, and you will see just... It's like being in a very fancy airport lounge where you walk around and you'll see...
Much more comfortable seating.
Lots of people fast asleep.
Yeah, they are very good. They do sleep a lot, tennis players, and they need to because they're putting in a lot of effort into their matches and their training. And basically, when they're not playing, they're pretty much either eating or sleeping. That's it. It's not much time left for anything else.
Basically, being a Labrador.
Yeah. Right. It's a wonder if any of them got families. It's not much time for anything. But it's true. The mothers definitely like to play the first matches. We saw Belinda Bencic play early today. And Elena obviously out of the way now. She'll get her media commitments done in the next hour and a half or so. And she'll be gone and she'll spend the evening. It depends on your circumstance. She's got a big team. She's got her parents. She's got Gail's parents. Gail's there as well. So there are people to look after their daughter and make it easier. But it depends on, you know, what kind of team you've got with you or how big it is. But in general, I think that probably a lot of the players don't even make a request.
No, they don't. They don't. And as I said, I'm not sure at Grand Slams if... Certainly players are requesting certain courts. I've never seen that at any.
Richard Gasquet did here. Always wanted to play on Court Suzanne Lonin.
Yes.
So he put the request in and he invariably was there.
Yes.
Didn't always work. Like you say, it's not a guarantee.
But sometimes it's also that they can make it known that they want a certain thing without formally putting a request in.
I think it's just the agent has a word with the the tournament referee and says, you know, if you can, stick it over here.
And I think, you know, the scheduling, and it's usually some kind of committee, really, made up of people from the broadcast side, as Simon was saying, the supervisors from the tours, the tournament director, of course. They will try to accommodate where they can, as long as it's fair to everybody involved. But, you know, we are in a hierarchical sport. The ranking system is the hierarchy which governs lots of decisions in tennis, and if you are higher ranked, you are one of the top four seeds, your request is likely to be listened to a little bit more than somebody else.
Exactly. So we are on court Suzanne Lonlen while we wait for while we wait for Novak Djokovic to come out on court Philippe Chatrier. It is Magda Linette leading 2-1 against Yelena Ostapenko in the third set. It is 40-30 on the Ostapenko serve. Ostapenko dressed all in black. And she serves off the top of the net and stays her side. She'll have to do a second serve. Just waits a moment while ball boys and girls get things ready. Now she's ready to go. No, she's not, because the ball toss not in the right way, right place. Second serve, Ostapenko serves a slow second serve to Linette, who just comes off the ball, gets it all wrong, sends it back and long, and it's two games apiece. She has a quick chat with her team.
Well, we've seen a lot of players actually struggle a little bit with their ball toss, and it's because there's so much sun, there's no cloud. It's certainly not a breath of wind anywhere.
Well, sometimes when you are serving and the sun's an issue, you actually have to physically move your ball toss, which can create issues in itself because you're so used to the rhythm of your normal serve at a professional level. It can be tough to adjust that ball toss. You sometimes throw it a bit lower or a bit to the side, get round it. Sure, you can just shut your eyes and hit it, like I used to try to do, which is not advisable. Linette serving at 2-2, finds good depth with her backhand and then goes back behind Ostapenko, but overdoes it and it's love 15. Linette, who can be a bit fiery on court, starting to get a little bit ratty with herself.
Well, Ostapenko's not without her fieriness.
Well, no, but she's very calm at the moment.
She's very calm and very contained in her body language.
Love 15. Linette, pale green top and a darker green skirt. White shoes, white visor. This is the first serve. Very deliberate service motion. Holds it for quite a long time before she actually throws the ball up. It may be too long because she double faults. And it's love 30. And this is danger time for Magda Linette. Ostapenko so experienced at this level. Linette's been around a long time too, but Ostapenko knows what's done. And I imagine the pull of playing Iga Świątek is keeping Ostapenko going no end.
Absolutely, she's a big match player.
Serve to the backhand of Ostapenko and followed by a good forehand from Linette. Much better. Puts it away down the line. It's 15-30.
Well, I think also players know Linette. They know that she's a tough competitor. They know that she will hang in there till the last point and that she's clever and wily and very able. So I think Ostapenko will be on her game. She's in a battle here.
She is indeed. Players are making their way onto the court. Philippe Chatrier will be switching over there very shortly. We'll see this game through. It's 15-30. Linette's second serve right onto the service line. The turn from Ostapenko right onto the baseline. And Linette can't deal with it. And it's 15-42 break points, Ostapenko.
It was a very, very deep return from Ostapenko. And it caught Linette, who'd barely finished a service motion.
Two break points. Ostapenko crouches down in her familiar pose. Racket held almost at head level. First serve from Linette. A good one out wide. Forehand return again deep from Ostapenko. Oh, the forehand lands in somehow from Linette. Looked like she thought it was going long, but she's back in this rally and goes behind Ostapenko. And it's in as the forehand on the line. Gets away with one. Saves the break point.
Well, there was no question of the call from Ostapenko. It looked right until the last possible second as if it was going to skew wide and in the end caught the corner between the tram line and the baseline.
The forehand before it must have been a miss hit, so it took ages to land. Serve ace from Linette and a huge fist pump and roar from the pole. Probably one from Iga Świątek too, watching. She's got the voodoo doll out right now. A little stab in there as Ostapenko tries to get nearer to her. 2-2 juice, third set. Good serve, chopped back by Ostapenko. It's not going to land in. Another good first serve. When she needed them, she's found three first serves in a row.
Well, she, as I said, she's gritty. She's a competitor.
Game point, Magda Linette. Looks up, just waits as the ball toss is not where she wanted it. Just a little bit too far to the left. Now she rocks back, serves. Ooh, going for that ace out wide once more. Just misses into the tram lines. Second serve. Lynette taking her time as she does. Second serve kicked to the centre of the court. Ostapenko makes a hash of it. And that is a good hold of serve for Magda Lynette. Saves two break points, moves ahead again 3-2. Knows is in front in this final set in the second round battle. But we are going to switch to Court Philippe Chatrier down below our commentary position and the first day appearance of the 24-time Grand Slam champion Novak Djokovic, who is shadow hitting at the net as the mascot Messi, throws the coin up for the toss.
Roland Garros.
Surf.
Last day. Great. Can we have the photo with the kids facing this way, please?
Novak's going to surf.
Big day for Luca and Alex, the mascots, isn't it?
Yeah, fantastic. That's a nice thing. Little word of encouragement from Novak to his opponent. Not too much. Don't play too well.
Give me a match, but not that much of a match.
Yeah, it's very hot. Just let me do my thing, will you? So, Novak Djokovic, 24-time Grand Slam champion. Unbelievable statistics. The numbers are nuts, aren't they? He's 39, which is bad, which is impressive enough, but what he's achieved in the sport is pretty remarkable. Three times the champion here. Won all over the world. Won all Masters thousands. Matched now by Jannik Sinner. People thought that might take a while to match, but Sinner's caught up pretty quickly. But in terms of Grand Slams, Novak is two ahead of anyone else, and it's going to take a long time before Sinner and Alcaraz or anyone else gets anywhere near it or even has any ideas about getting up to where Novak is. And even though, Eleanor, he's not played much at all coming into this, we've said it before, you can't write him off. He came through a tough first round match, and you'd expect him probably to kick on from here.
It would be utter madness to write Djokovic off, partly obviously because of his phenomenal record here and absolutely everywhere he plays, but also because of his personality. He's here because he wants to be here and because he believes and in his mind thinks he's going to win.
Yeah,
you know, he wouldn't play here if he wasn't considering himself a contender. He's not. I don't think he's interested in a kind of sunshine tour to go around and get the applause. He's here because he thinks he can win, and he's absolutely right. I think the question mark over Djokovic is how his body holds up. Of course, as you mentioned, he's 39 and he's played so little in the last few months.
Yeah, I mean, he's not a normal 39. Let's face it.
No,
but the wear and tear on his body over the years, it gets to you after a while. And what he's found in the last couple of years, for the most part, is that the cumulative effect of each round takes its toll on him, and invariably he's come up with some tiny little injury that's made life more difficult for him. But in Australia this year, he got to the final. He beat Jannik Sinner in an incredible semi-final and pushed Carlos Alcaraz pretty hard in the final.
That's what people forget. Sometimes we're probably as guilty as anyone of talking about Novak Djokovic as if he's sort of his peak was so long ago, and that he's now really just here for, you know, with a kind of distant dream of signing off on a Grand Slam. I don't think that's how he thinks at all. As you said, he was, you know, he could absolutely have won the Australian Open, beat Jannik Sinner there, which, as history has shown, not that easy. This year,
not at all.
I think he's one of the few people in the draw who will absolutely not fear playing Jannik Sinner and will be very sure that he knows how to beat him.
Well, first of all, he's going to have to get the better of Valentin Royer of France. Let's give you a little bit of information about him. He is 24 years old. As Novak Djokovic's achievements are read out, his three wins here, his 10 wins in Australia, his 7 wins in Wimbledon,
Not bad.
It's all right, isn't it?
Four wins at US.
It's okay.
It's all right. Average.
You take any of the one Grand Slams and look at Novak Djokovic's record there, and that would be enough for most players.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So true. And he's done it everywhere as Novak Djokovic, and he gets a lovely round of applause from a very full stadium, actually, given the weather. And we talked about how hot it is many, many times, and we will continue to do so until it cools down a little bit. But for the fans sitting in the heat of the sun, it is tough, really tough. It's tough enough for the players, but at least, you know, as the shadow comes on the court later on, they get a bit of rest. But for large parts of the stadium, it could be pretty hard work sitting in that sunlight. Anyway, Valentin Royer making his second main draw in appearance in Roland Garros, made his debut last year as a wild card. Lost in the first round to Galan last year, 5 sets. Lost the qualifying the year before. He got to the second round at Wimbledon last year and at the US Open. He was trying to get to the third round of a Grand Slam for the first time in his career. Should he somehow manage to beat Novak, he would be the first Frenchman to defeat a top 10 player at Roland Garros since Richard Gasquet beat the number 6, Kei Nishikori, in 2016. And no Frenchman has beaten Djokovic since 2018.
I mean, that is one of those peculiar stats, isn't it? Because it's sort of, it's meaningful here. It's not really meaningful in the broader sense of Djokovic's career. No. It just tells the story that actually, it's not that he's picking on Frenchmen.
It's just that he's just beating
everybody.
Exactly, yeah. But Valentin Royer is ranked 74 in the world, career high 54 earlier this year. So making his way up the rankings, doing very nicely indeed. What a great stage for him on home soil at the home tournament, the home Grand Slam of the French. And here he is playing against Novak Djokovic, who is opening things up from the near end as we look at the court from our commentary position, dressed in orange shorts, pale orange shorts, and a sort of pale yellow shirt, white visor, white shoes, and a whopping forehand to start things off.
He's looking very peachy.
He is.
He's Novak.
He's gone for the pastels, hasn't he?
Peachy tones.
Peach is a good colour. Very little wind to affect anything. I think we're all looking to see how Novak handles the heat. That has been an issue for him in the past. But big favourite today, as long as his body is okay, as Eleanor Preston said. Kick serve from Djokovic. Kicks up miles up over the head of Royer, who does a good job in hoisting it really high, almost moonball return. Forehand up the line from Royer, backhand up the line from Djokovic. He's right on his game early on. Gets the point, and it's 30 love. It's 4-2, 40-15, Linette against Ostapenko. Maybe denying that Świątek-Ostapenko battle.
And how often does that happen? When we look ahead to a third round, we say, that could be a great third round, that could be difficult. And that's just not how tennis works, does it? So many unknowns.
That's why some players don't even bother looking at the draw until they get to that round. Another big forehand from Djokovic.
Well, you've got the likes of Adrian Mannarino, who doesn't want to know who he's playing next until he walks on court.
I mean, that's a bit bizarre.
It's quite an eccentricity, isn't it?
So what do his coaches do? They do no scouting, or they just start telling him tactics from the start? Here we go. Here's your stats.
I think they do a lot of scouting, and they don't tell them they're doing it.
I'm sure that's right. 40 love. Game
Djokovic
to love. Lovely holder serve from Djokovic. Just taps the ball back to the ball boy as he moves to his chair. And opens his account in the second round match with a lovely hold of serve. It's 5-2 Linette. Mm-hmm. He's consolidating that break.
We'll keep an eye on that one. I've just looked at my weather app and it says it's 32 degrees. It feels a bit hotter than that. It also says, helpfully, feels like 31. It doesn't. Feels like 472.
Exactly.
Chance of rain, less than 5%.
Well, I'm going to give you an update on Fran Jones, by the way, because we wrote her off a little bit earlier. Marie Buskova winning the first set, 6-love. But it's 5-4 Jones serving for the second set. 15-40, though, on her serve on court 13. That is a great effort from Fran Jones. For anyone who doesn't know, she has a condition where she was born with three fingers on one hand and seven toes. Unbelievable handicap.
Valentin.
But most people would have said, that's enough, can't be playing tennis. And here she is competing at this level. Her attitude and her will to desire to do well is unmatched, really. Incredible effort that she's making to be playing at this level and playing well.
And playing in the second round of a Grand Slam.
Against the number 27 seed, holding her own in that second set. Royer starts his service game with a kick second serve and then nets a forehand. And as always, I'd say 24 is young, for all these young players taking on someone like Novak Djokovic, that balance that they have to find between aggression, going for it, knowing that they can't just push the ball around because Novak will absolutely destroy them. But also, you can't be making too many mistakes and gifting so many errors. And that is always an issue for a lot of these players who are on this stage for the first time.
Well, you've got to play at the top of your game, but you've got to sustain the top of your game for much longer than you're used to having to sustain it.
Absolutely.
And you know that any slip up, any loss of concentration, any moment of fragility is going to be punished.
So true. He's on the board in this game, 15-all. Djokovic returning on the forehand side, and then a slice backhand that drags its way down to the backhand side, onto the sideline from Royer. Djokovic has to run right across the court to get back into play. And again, on the backhand side, as Royer ups his game with a forehand down the inside in. And Djokovic misses the forehand, and some good signs from Royer of what he might be about.
Trondkens.
Nice hitting from the baseline.
Yes, he's holding his own so far, isn't he? It's a long, long way to go. But you also know that as a Frenchman playing here on court, Philippe Chatrier, anything you do right is going to get a big cheer. You're going to be able to get that support and that inspiration.
30-15, Royer serving. Big serve to the backhand of Djokovic. Sticks out a racket. Of course, it lands in the midcourt, but it's a forehand that is put away nicely by Royer.
If there's a stat somewhere for how many balls Djokovic gets back into play. Not talking about return winners or anything like that, just getting the return back into play.
Well, that is a stat that they keep. And I'm sure if I get a moment, I'll try and look for career stats on that, but it'll be very high.
Arguably better than certainly anyone else of the last 15 years.
Exactly, probably about 80%. Good forehand from Royer, but Djokovic gets there and then he has to move backwards to hit a lob. Awesome backhand lob. It was just long from Djokovic, and a good hold of serve from Valentin Royer. One game all in this opening set.
Well, Matthew has emailed in. Don't forget, you can email us at frenchopenradio@fft.fr. Hi, Simon and Eleanor. Loving the commentary this afternoon. How does it affect a seed's chances of a deep run having a five-set first-round match such as Casper Ruud and Felix Auger-Aliassime had? And who is commentating on the night sessions this evening?
Merci.
More importantly, who is on the night session? Are you on the night session
tonight? No, not me.
We can tell you that in a second when I check it. I imagine.
In answer to your question about the five setters, as we've said, it's a mixed bag, isn't it? Because on the one hand, you feel like you're in the tournament. You've had a bit of battle hardening. It's going to give you a lot of confidence to come through a very, very tough match. On the other hand, physically, it's going to sap your resources just a little bit. It depends
I think it depends when it comes.
Yeah.
So I think you can get away with it in the first round. And I think Casper Ruud will be almost like reborn because he was virtually dead at that third and fourth set. Fourth set, he couldn't walk. He was just giving the points away. And waiting for hopefully his recovery to happen, which it did with a bit of luck and a bit of a break. So I think you can get away with it a bit in the first couple of rounds. You don't want to have too many in a row, obviously. But if you have one in the semi-final or quarter-final and semi-final, then you're sort of asking for trouble in the final. But I feel like if you have it earlier in the tournament, you can recover from it because you do get the luxury of a day off. I put luxury in inverted commas there. It doesn't work on radio, does it?
Simon's waving his fingers in the air.
You do have a day off a match. You're probably practicing a little bit, gentle practice, stretching, all that sort of stuff, ice bars, recovery, but you're not in the stress of a match situation every single day, and that does matter. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's all the other stuff. You spend a long time on court like that, especially in these kind of conditions. The recovery takes that bit longer. So you're on site probably for an extra hour than you might have been otherwise, because you're going to spend a lot of time ice bath, massage, all of those things, warm down. So that's cumulative as well.
Well, the voodoo doll has worked for Iga Świątek, because Magda Linette, her compatriot, has taken out her nemesis, Yelena Ostapenko, in three sets.